Good afternoon. My name is Ann Cavall, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and Volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. We have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. Also, for those connected via the webcast, you should see a box to the left of the slides where you'll be able to submit questions during the Q&A portion near the end of the session, but we will also accept questions throughout the whole presentation. So please do submit questions. We do want to hear from you. This year, the BCEA continues to expand our mission, providing frequent breast cancer educational resources that are easy to access. This year's educational programming has encouraged, engaged, and empowered our community in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year, also through our signature education conference that is held each October. Our recent conference featured topics such as a look inside a developing tumor, living well beyond diagnosis, triple negative breast cancer treatments. We had an on-site mobile mammography unit, and many roundtable discussions that connected attendees on the most pressing breast health topics. We are already planning for October 2018, and we hope to see you there. Please also tap into the ongoing resources on our website and social media channels that are available 24/7. If you are unable to attend any of our previous webinars, recordings of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at www.breastcancereducation.org under the webinar tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information at your convenience. The BCEA also welcomes your involvement in our organization. We welcome participation on all levels and have many different types of volunteer opportunities available, whether it's just for an hour a year or a couple hours a month. We have exciting plans for 2018 and hope that you can help us deliver education and empowerment to those fighting breast cancer. If you have not done so already, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using the hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please be sure to also keep your eye out for more information on our upcoming webinars in 2018. We will share specific information on these webinars as soon as complete details are available. And now I'd like to introduce the speaker for today's webinar. Dr. Tricia Prescott is a diagnostic radiologist who specializes in breast imaging. She received her medical degree from the University of Minnesota in 2007. She then went on to complete a diagnostic radiology residency at the University of Minnesota. During residency, she was elected to serve as chief resident. In 2012, she became board certified in diagnostic radiology. Following residency, she went on to complete a breast imaging fellowship at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Prescott has been practicing as a breast imaging specialist with St. Paul Radiology since 2013. During this time, she has taken on leadership roles at Health Partners and Health East Breast Centers in the Twin Cities area. Welcome, Dr. Prescott.
Thanks, Ann, and thanks for having me to talk to everybody a little bit more about breast cancer screening and 3D mammography. So as Ann said, I'm a breast imaging specialist, so that means I'm a diagnostic radiologist who primarily works in breast centers, either seeing patients that have abnormal mammograms or new breast symptoms, and then I'm also reading screening mammograms and things like that throughout the day. So let's get started. So first I just want to kind of give you an overview of what we'll talk about. I want to kind of review the screening mammogram recommendations. They've gotten a lot of press lately, and they're a bit confusing, so I want to go over the latest on that, and then talk more about 3D mammography. That's also known as tomosynthesis, which we'll talk about a little bit later, And then also breast density, which has also been more in the news lately as well. So first, screening mammography or screening mammograms. Why do we do them? What's the goal of them? Well, the goal is to find breast cancer early when the treatment is more effective and less harmful, and there's a higher chance that we can cure the breast cancer. So we look for it early before you have any symptoms. So breast cancer, in order to be detected, it has to reach a certain size. And if you're not doing any screening or any breast exams, you know, it'd have to become more obvious where you have an obvious lump or something. Screening mammograms are checking the breast on a regular interval to look for changes in the breast tissue. So this would be before the onset of symptoms. And the earlier we detect it, the lower the chance that it has spread to other sites. So those are the goals of screening. So I just want to talk about size of detection. So we know that from a lot of data that the bigger the breast cancer is, the larger the chance that it's spread to somewhere else on the body. So the data shows that if you find a breast cancer when it's 1 centimeter, about 10% of those women will have it spread to the lymph nodes. And usually that's the axillary lymph nodes, which are in the armpit area. If we wait until the breast cancer, don't find it till it's 2 centimeters, about 35% of those women will have it spread to a site outside of the breast. And if you don't find it until the breast cancer is 4 centimeters in size, then 60% have spread outside of the breast. So it really is important to find it early when it's small. And I don't have this slide in here, but we do know also from data from women, a lot of women, that the average size that we can find, the average size of breast cancer is found on screening mammograms, and now this is taking everybody, thousands and thousands of women, is about 1.5 centimeters. And now if you take women that aren't being screened and just it gets found if they have a lump or somebody knows, essentially a lump in the breast, those women, the average size of those are about 2.5 centimeters. So you find them smaller, and you have a better chance that it hasn't spread anywhere. And also on this slide, just to kind of give you the overview of the stages of breast cancer, there is a stage zero, and that is something called DCIS, which is ductal carcinoma in situ. That just means it's still contained, kind of a membrane around it, you can think of it as, but there's no chance it could spread outside of the breast if it's only DCIS. So that's what stage zero means. And then stage one is when we get into invasive breast cancers that do have the potential to spread elsewhere. And a lot of it is dependent on size and then whether or not it's spread to lymph nodes. So that's just kind of an overview of the stages of breast cancer and size at detection and why it's important to find it when it's small. So what should you do with screening? It always used to be when they first started doing it in the 90s and when they started doing it in the 80s, it was start at 40 and do it every year. But then in 2009, I think, was the first new set of guidelines that came out from different groups of people, kind of looking at the data and revising their screening recommendations. So now there's a lot of different so-called experts giving recommendations. And so here are some of the experts. So this just means these medical groups that have given guidelines for screening mammography. So there's the American Cancer Society, which most of us have probably heard of, American College of OBGYNs, American College of Radiologists, American Society of Breast Surgeons, NCCN, which is the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, and that is a pretty big body that does a lot of guidance for the treatment of breast cancer as well. And the majority of oncologists and people who treat breast cancer follow the NCCN guidelines. And then last on the list is the USPSTF. That stands for United States Preventive Services Task Force. And that was the group that had new recommendations in 2009. So we're going to look to see what all these people say. So it's pretty complicated. Different experts recommend different regimens for screening. So first we'll talk about when should women start screening. Like I said, it historically had been start at 40. But a lot of the, which we call randomized control trials, didn't include women in their 40s. They included women in their 50s and above. So there wasn't as much data on women in their 40s. So some groups revised their recommendations to exclude the 40s because there wasn't as much research on that age group. So as far as when to start, the American College of Radiology and NCCN, now that's that National Cancer Institute that kind of directs treatment of breast cancer, they say start at 40. Now, American Cancer Society, that's ACS, and then American College of OBGYN, that's the ACOG, they say at 40 you should have a discussion with women, offer them screening mammograms, but kind of let it make it be a conversation and a joint decision whether or not to start screening at 40. But then they say, but by the time you're 45, you should definitely start screening. And then the United States Preventative Services Task Force, that's that last one over here, they say start at 50. They revised it because of there was less data for women in their 40s. But there is definitely a fair amount of data for women in their 40s, but not as much as for women in their 50s and above. So the age to start is controversial. And then frequency, how often should we do it? So, again, you'll notice a theme here. ACR and NCCN, they have a more kind of a proactive approach, is that they start at 40 and do it annually and recommend doing it annually. And now the next group, the ACS and ACOG, ACS, again, is American Cancer Society. They say, they said definitely start by 45, but consider starting at 40. So they say from the age group of 45 to 55 should be doing it every year. But then once you hit 55, you can go down to every other year or keep doing it every year. So it's very complicated, and it's hard for women to know what to do. And then at the bottom here, the United States Preventative Services Task Force says do it every other year. So that's a question as well, how often to do it. And then finally, when to stop doing it. A lot of the groups say, you know, if you're healthy and your life expectancy is 5 to 10 years, it makes sense to keep screening, because if you develop a breast cancer, we want to find it when it's curable, so you can get on with your life. On the other hand, the United States Preventative Services Task Force said there's no good studies on women older than 74 to suggest screening. So they say do it from 50 to 74 and do it every other year. That's the most lenient, I guess, recommendations of screening. So we've gotten a lot of questions because different people are telling different women what to do, and it's tricky because, who should you listen to? And I think for all women, it's kind of think what's important to them. If you screen starting at 40 and you do it every year, you're going to have the best chance to find breast cancer when it's early, when it's curable. On the other hand, you know, screening does – the downside of screening is – false positives, meaning sometimes you have to come back and have an extra test. Sometimes you even have to have a biopsy, and it turns out to be benign or not cancer. So that's the downside. But the upside is you have a better chance of finding breast cancer when it's small, when it's curable. So I'm going to kind of jump back to this 40s age group. So the recommendations for women in their 40s, that's where we get a lot of questions because it's not real clear. So 40s. It's true that breast cancer is not as common for women in their 40s than women in their 50s and above, but it's not uncommon by any means. We see a lot of women in their 40s with breast cancer, and even younger. But the statistics show that 1 in 6 breast cancers occur in women in their 40s. So that's not a small number. So to me, to say don't even screen women in their 40s seems hard to believe that that's the recommendation in my mind, because it's not uncommon in women in their 40s. And the other thing about younger women is they do tend to get they have a higher rate of having a more aggressive breast cancer than older women. It's just what it is. Not all women in their 40s have an aggressive type, but they're just more likely than a woman in her, like, say, her 70s. So I think it's important to screen women in their 40s. And then this other little stat here. So since we started doing screening mammography regularly, and that started kind of 80s to 90s, the death rate from breast cancer has decreased by 40%. Now, some of that is due to treatment, but some of it is definitely due to the fact that we started routinely screening people. So it does save lives. So it's confusing. I understand that with the screening recommendations. And the one thing that everybody will agree on is, even the people who recommend don't start till 50 and do it every other year do acknowledge that if you start at 40 and do it every year, you do save the most lives. So that's what I tell women. I think that's the best thing to do, but I do understand there's other differing recommendations out there. All right, so now we're going to get into 3D mammograms. So 3D mammograms came about in 2011. Like I said at the beginning, it's also known as tomosynthesis. You know, when we're working, I'm talking to colleagues, we refer to it as tomo, but it's also known as 3D mammograms. And what that means is that instead of just getting, you know, standard historical 2D mammograms were always, you'd get two pictures of each breast, one from top to bottom and one from side to side. And so it's a total of four pictures for a screening mammogram. But now with tomosynthesis, or 3D, what we get is kind of looking at the breast tissue layer by layer. So we get numerous images, and it has a certain area of the breast in focus. So you basically march through the breast tissue one layer at a time, and they're 1 millimeter slices. So it's very, very thin. Gives you a much more detailed look at the breast tissue compared to just the four pictures of the standard mammogram. When we're reading those, we're just scrolling through each image on all four views. We do it for all four views, and we kind of look through layer by layer. And then why does this help us? So the way it's helpful is that it decreases false negatives. So false negatives are when we say a mammogram looks normal, but there was actually a breast cancer there. You know, mammograms are good, but they're not perfect. You know, they pick up somewhere between around 85% of breast cancers should be seen on mammograms, but not all of them. And those are mainly in women with very dense breast tissue. Those are the ones that can hide more in the breast tissue. So a false negative is when we say, oh, it's fine, but there was really a cancer there. That's obviously not good. We want to decrease the number of false negatives. And the other thing that it can decrease is false positives. So that's where I was when I was referring to the downside of mammography. It's where women have to come back, look closer to a certain area, maybe have some more mammogram pictures, maybe have an ultrasound, and then it turns out to be nothing. Those are false positives. So tomo or 3D mammograms can help on both of those aspects, which are both good things. So the way it decreases false positives, so that's where you have to come back and look closer and nothing was there, is a lot of false positives are on a 2D mammogram are the way that the breast tissue is kind of overlapping on itself. So basically we look, like let's say we're looking at an image from the breast top down, all tissue in the upper part of the breast is overlapping on tissue in the lower part of the breast, and it can create an illusion that it's a little bit brighter there or that there could be a mass there. We call that superimposition, or some people call it summation artifact. It's probably the most common reason for a callback or for an abnormal mammogram. So then we bring you back and we look closer and we say, oh, that was just overlapping breast tissue. Well, with 3D mammograms, when we're looking at it one layer at a time, it shows us that it was the layers of the breast tissue. So we can recognize that better, and so we call that back less often. We still do have callbacks for superimposition on 3D, but not as many. And then the other thing that it can do is decrease false negatives. So that's when we say something's normal, but there was actually a breast cancer in the breast tissue. So one of the reasons that happens is I was referring to dense breast tissue. Dense glandular tissue is white on a mammogram. Breast cancers are also white on a mammogram. So if you have a lot of overlapping dense breast tissue and a small cancer, it can just hide in that tissue, and the tissue can look normal. So if we're doing the 3D, when we're marching through the breast tissue one layer at a time, it helps. There's less of an issue with masking because we can focus on one layer at a time, so there's less of that overlapping tissue. Now, I will say it's not perfect. So some women that have extremely dense breast tissue, even when we're looking at it one layer at a time, it's so dense that it can still mask things. So it's not perfect, but it definitely decreases the masking of breast cancer. So this is just an image of a 3D mammogram machine. It's pretty much, it looks almost exactly the same as the 2D one that women are used to, but it operates a little bit differently. So that's on our next slide. So this is just a diagram of how it works. So at the bottom of the picture is the breast that's in compression there. It has all those lines through it. The lines are showing the little layers that we're going to look through 1 millimeter at a time. And then the mammogram machine, instead of just staying in one position and taking a picture, it will move in an arc and take multiple very low-dose images, and then it takes all that data it got from those pictures and reconstructs it into 1 millimeter slices, and then we get it to read, and we can look at it 1 millimeter at a time.
So you just mentioned the low dose, and I'm not sure if you're going to get to this or not, but we did get a our first question was, how much higher is the radiation dose with 3D?
Yep, I have a. We go into radiation dose here, I think, in a couple slides,
perfect.
So I will detail that here in a moment. Very good question. I'm just going to kind of overview how it's done. It's for women who's never had it. It's not much different at all than a standard mammogram. There's some misconception that there doesn't have to be any compression for a 3D. There's still compression. The breast is still compressed, kind of like you've had on your traditional mammograms. It's just that the X-ray tube, is going to move while it's taking the images, where before it just stays stationary. We still get the same views, the view from the top, which is called a CC view, like a top-down view, and then a side-to-side view called an MLO view. That just stands for cranial caudal, just means head-to-toe view, and MLO is medial lateral, like just means kind of side-to-side view. So the same standard views. When we read a 3D mammogram, we have to have the same standard 2D views in addition to those slices. It's a federal law. You can't just look at the slices alone. You have to have the overview pictures like a standard mammogram. So this is where we're going to get into radiation dose. So you can do 3D mammograms two different ways. There's combo mode, and that means you take all four normal pictures like a standard mammogram, and then you get the 3D images, those slice images, separately. That's the combo mode. That is going to be a little bit more more radiation. And then there's another way to do it, which is the newer, more updated way. When this first came out, they all had to be done in combo mode. But now most vendors, if they haven't, are developing a what they call a synthetic 2D mammogram, and that means that they can use the data, the pictures from those 3D slices to reconstruct just a standard view. So they don't have to go back and take those standard mammogram views. They can get them from the data and reconstruct it. And people refer to that as a synthetic 2D view. So I'm going to, after this, this is the first patient, just an example, and then I think we go into radiation dose after that. But this is just an example of a patient who came in for screening mammogram. And so the view on the left is the top head-to-toe view, and the view on the right-hand side of your screen is the side-to-side view. This person is fairly dense, but not extreme. If you can't take a look at that, see if anything catches your eye. To me, when I'm looking at it, I think the view on the right looks nothing catches your eye too much. The view on the left, there's maybe a little bright spot on the upper aspect of your screen. But I'm going to show you the tomo picture of it. So the left view now, this is the standard 2D view that we've always been getting for mammograms. Now on the left is a single slice from the tomo or the 3D images. So we picked the slice that has this particular area in focus, and I'm going to see if this little mark works here. But here is this area that pops out a little bit more, and we're going to zoom in on that. So here it is. You can't see my arrow there, but this image on the left is that selected image from the 3D slices, and then here's kind of a close-up on it. I think I'm going to click ahead. So here I just want to compare the standard 2D mammograms versus that selected tomo slice. So what on the left is the standard one, on the right is the selected slice where that area is in focus, and you can see on this picture on the left, there's more of that white tissue. That's that overlapping tissue. It looks a little bit brighter in that area, but it's hard to pick out. But here you see there's a central bright area here and these kind of lines extending from that. It's a little what we would refer to as architectural distortion. When breast cancers, not all of them, but the majority, when they start growing, they cause a response in the surrounding breast tissue, and it kind of has this reaction to it, and then you get this what we call speculation or speculated mass where it's kind of pulling on that tissue around it. You get those lines radiating from it, almost like a star look. So that's a little invasive breast cancer. This is going to show you that same breast cancer on the side-to-side view. The left side is the 2D, the standard view. The right side is the 3D, and I will circle where it's going to become in focus here. It's hard to pick that out on the 2D one alone. Now here is the 3D image on the left, and then just a close-up on the 3D image here. So here you can, again, see that kind of central density, irregular shape, that starry look to it. It's being pulling on that surrounding tissue. That's a small mass with architectural distortion, and this is an invasive lobular carcinoma. These ones can be trickier to pick up on mammograms than invasive ductal carcinomas, but I'm just going to zip ahead. So you think you're done on this patient, but we're not, because she has a second tiny cancer in here on the inner aspect of her breast. So we were looking at the outer aspect before, and now I'm going to focus your attention on a different area. Hard to see without zooming in, but this, again, on the left-hand side is the standard 2D view. The right-hand side is a selected tomo or a 3D picture. This is a very subtle one. This is also an invasive lobular carcinoma. This is the selected image from the 3D. This is more subtle, but you can see kind of that central area and a little bit of speculation, those linear areas being pulled on that tissue. Not going to skip this one. So here is that same little second cancer that we saw. Now this is just a side-to-side view. On the one on the left, I don't think there's a radiologist who could pick up this cancer on just the 2D view. But if you look on the image on the right-hand side of your screen, this area pops out at us a little bit more and brings it into focus, catches your eye when you're kind of scanning through that tissue. So here it is again, that central density and that kind of starry look with all those lines extending from it. So that was this woman had two small invasive cancers in her breast. I think for her, here it is again. Now this is just close up on this 2D view versus the tomo. Like I said, on the 2D view, I don't think there's anybody who could find this with the 2D alone. But on the tomo, it really kind of makes it pop out at you a little bit more. So this patient had ended up having two cancers in her breast, two small ones. I think maybe the one on the outer aspect of her breast could have been found on the 2D alone, but this second one, I don't think anybody would have found it without the 3D mammogram. So that was my first case. Now I'm just going to go back to the discussion on radiation dose. So the FDA is, screen mammography is very, very regulated. It's the most regulated imaging test there is by far. So there's something called the MQSA, which the FDA runs, and that monitors us for quality, monitors our outcomes. It's very regulated. So they also regulate the dose of the radiation dose for mammograms. So purview, you shouldn't be above 3 milligray, which just is a measurement of radiation dose. I want to say that's a very, very small dose compared to some of the other imaging tests, or even if you take a flight from New York to California, you get at least as much radiation just from being on an airplane on that long flight. So it's a small dose, but there's a limit to how much radiation can be in each view. So our standard 2D view is kind of the classic mammogram you think of as standard 2D mammogram. It usually doesn't go up to that limit of dose. It's usually about half as much. It's usually 1 to 1.5 milligray. And so when Tomo or 3D first came out, we had to do it in that combo mode where we had to get the standard mammogram and then do the 3D imaging separately. When we did the combo mode, it was more radiation, but it was still under the FDA limits for each view, which is 3 milligray. So it was almost twice as much doing the combo mode, which is still within federal guidelines, still safe, but more than this 2D alone. So a lot of the vendors, the people who make this equipment, like I said, they have this synthetic 2D view, which helps us, which reconstructs the standard views without taking extra pictures. So now that we have that, and I can't speak for all the sites in the community because I know some do combo mode, and not everybody uses this synthetic view. All of our the sites that I work, we do the synthetic view. So when we do the synthetic view, we are saving the radiation. We're not giving you as much radiation. So what that means is that for our 3D mammograms, they're essentially a similar dose to the standard 2D ones because we're not repeating those views. So hopefully that all makes sense. But if you use the synthetic 2D view, your dose really isn't much different at all and nearly the same. The one exception is women who have very, very thick breasts. They are a little bit higher dose, meaning when we compress them, it's several centimeters in thickness. Those ones do have a slightly higher dose than 2D alone, but women with average breast thickness, the radiation dose is essentially the same from the standard 2D and then 3D using that synthetic view. So hopefully that makes sense. I know it's a little complicated, but
it does. And I'm wondering if we could just step back for a second because I did get a question on someone was wondering how large were those masses that you were referring to and showing us in patient one.
Oh, those were less than a centimeter. So those, I don't have the measurements right in front of me, but those were probably maybe between 5 to 10 millimeters, so under a centimeter.
Thank you.
And that's smaller than the average size that we pick on mammograms. And if you remember, I said it in the beginning, if you're not getting screened, because I've studied women that don't get screened at all, and when they find their breast cancer, it has to be because you can feel it, because how else are you going to find it?
Right.
Their average size is about 2.5 centimeters. So those little cancers we saw were definitely under a centimeter, so small cancers.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not sure if you're going to address this coming up, so just let me know if you are. But another question that we got was, are there different levels of dense breasts? And she further added, if a woman has a dense breast, what are your recommendations for screening? Is it more often, MRI in addition, or is that something that you're going to talk about later?
Yep, that's our next. We're going to talk about breast density.
Perfect.
Because that's a big topic, too. So we'll get to that soon. And just to finish up on the radiation risk, because I want to kind of emphasize that it is a very small dose for a mammogram, because I've seen women who've, you know, haven't been getting mammograms because of the radiation risk, but I just want to kind of put it in perspective. So breast cancer, unfortunately, is very common. So if you take 100,000 women, there's 200 naturally occurring breast cancers per year out of 100,000 women, for women in their 40s. I hope that made sense. So 100,000 women in their 40s, we're going to find 200 naturally occurring breast cancers. They're just there. And like I said, mammograms aren't perfect, but they're pretty good. So you can safely assume about 150 of these or more will be identified on the mammogram. There are a number that aren't going to be seen on the mammogram, but at least 3/4 will be found on the mammogram. So 200 out of 100,000 women, that's not insignificant, I'll put it that way. Now, if we think about radiation risk, you know, the risk of radiation is if it's cumulative over your lifespan. If you have a lot of radiation, or, you know, they've gotten a lot of data from people from Japan when they had the nuclear bombs dropped, that large doses of radiation can induce cancer. And so, and it's dose dependent. So if you have just a tiny amount of radiation, it's a teeny tiny risk. But the more and more you get, the risk goes up. So if you take these same women, these women in their 40s, and they are screening their life, getting a yearly screening mammogram, what is the dose of radiation that they're getting by screening every year? What risk does that give them? So the risk of radiation for those women is that potentially maybe 6 cancers were induced from radiation out of 100,000. So you compare 6 out of 100,000 to 200 out of 100,000. It's definitely more likely that you're going to just have cancer naturally than it's going to be induced from having mammograms. I know that's a lot of numbers and complicated. Hopefully that makes sense. It's meant to compare the risk. You know, what is your risk benefit?
I think it definitely puts it into perspective.
Yeah. So while there's nothing that's totally risk-free, but based on these numbers, the safest thing to do is to get screened to avoid mortality from breast cancer. I'll put it that way. So anyhow, I want to show you guys another case before we get to breast density. Now, this is a very subtle case, just to highlight the benefit of 3D mammograms. So this is a patient. She has dense breast tissue. She was young. I want to say she was somewhere in her 40s. But she had a screening mammogram, and this is her standard views. Just looking at these, it's hard to pick out any particular spot. She has dense tissue, that white tissue in there. And then I'm going to show you a single image from her tomosynthesis slices, or the 3D slices, where we go 1 millimeter at a time. Now, it's still very subtle on these tomo pictures, but on the left-hand side of your screen, there's going to be a very subtle abnormality right in here. We will zoom in on that. So here, the left side of your screen now with the white circle, that's the selected tomo slice that has the area in focus. And now here's when you zoom in on it. Even on this, it's still very subtle, and she's very dense. And I don't, if we refer back to the beginning, 3D mammograms are good, but they're not perfect. So women that have really dense breast tissue, you can see she, even on this zoomed-in picture, she has a lot of that white glandular tissue. That can mask things, even on the 3D, because there's so much of it that it almost every slice of the image has a kind of a white look to it. But on her, luckily, we were able to pick up this small abnormality. So it's very subtle and quite hard to appreciate, but she has this central density and these little, if you can kind of imagine that starry look where there's little lines pulling into it. So this is a very subtle, very tiny focus of architectural distortion. So this was called back on our screening mammogram. We saw it again on our extra views. We looked with ultrasound. We didn't see any mass with ultrasound. Couldn't find anything but on ultrasound. But we knew that appearance was worrisome, that appearance of the mammogram. So she had a, at that time, we didn't have 3D guided biopsy, which we actually do now, but at that time we didn't. So we went by landmarks to sample the area, and we got our, click to the next screen. But we went by our landmarks to get a sample of that area, and it did come back with some abnormal cells, some atypia. So we sent her on to have that whole, this whole little area excised by a surgeon. And it did turn out to be a small breast cancer. And I'm just going to show you these comparison images again. So here's a zoomed in on the standard 2D view and then the tomo view. Now, this is very subtle. I will say it's probably about as small and as subtle as you're going to, as any radiologist can pick up. But she has, this is that little focus of distortion. And it's, you have to imagine all those little lines kind of coming to that central density there. So that's what was found. So she had that area excised. This, I'm going to kind of skip over these. This is the side-to-side view. It's not quite as obvious. We'll just zoom in on it there. It's going to be right in here. The thing about her was it was so subtle, but it was there. It was a real abnormality. And when it, and when they took that area out, it was an invasive lobular cancer. And she had already had a micromet. A micromet means some cells have spread to the lymph node, but they're so small you can only see it with a microscope. So this was an important breast cancer because it was already starting to go to the lymph node despite how tiny and subtle it is. So without our 3D mammogram on this woman, we wouldn't have found it. Hopefully we'd have found it the next year, but who knows what, you know, what the outcome would have been. But luckily we found that teeny tiny little spot, and so she should do very well because it was small and it was just one micromet. So that's just kind of to highlight the how this does make a difference in women's prognosis and their outcome. And so now we're going to go on to breast density. So many of you may have heard that or noticed when you get your mammogram results that you get a you may or may not get a notification about density. So in 2014, we were the 16th state to pass a law that says women with dense breast tissue have to be notified that they have dense breast tissue when they get their mammogram results. And since that time, there's now 30 states, and I believe there's a something in the federal legislation that it might become a federal law that this has to happen, but that's not in place yet. So at this point, there's 30 states that have this law. And what it says in some form or another between the states is that you have to tell women who have dense breast tissue that they have dense breast tissue, and you also have to tell them that it can make it more difficult to detect breast cancer. That's where I was talking about the masking of things, that dense tissue is white on a mammogram. Breast cancers are also white. So we're looking more of a needle in a haystack situation. And it may also be associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. Now, that risk is pretty small, you know, as far as an increased risk of breast cancer, but it is, and that's compared to women who don't have breast, who don't have dense breasts. So women who have more fatty replaced breasts compared to these denser breast women, it's a small risk, but some studies have shown it may increase the risk of developing breast cancer. And I kind of think of it as, well, if you have more glandular tissue, you have more potential sites to develop breast cancer, so it makes sense that the risk would be a little bit higher as opposed to somebody with more fatty breast tissue. So that's the law. And just a little history, where did it come from? It actually, I can't remember which state, but somewhere on the East Coast, a woman was diagnosed with breast cancer, and it wasn't seen on the mammogram. And afterwards, she found someone said, well, you have very dense breast tissue. It's hard to find breast cancer and dense breast tissue. And so she kind of went on this, kind of started this group to inform women, to empower women to know more about their breast density. So because she thought, well, I wish I would have known I had dense breast tissue. Maybe I would have done something differently. So that's kind of where this all came from, and is a women's advocacy group, and now it's gone a long way, and it will probably be, all states will have this this law. But this is just their website that started it all, the breast density notification. This is just a resource because they have a lot of good information. This California was one of the first not the first, but one of the first states to have the law, and they have a good website for both information for providers. A lot of primary care providers get questions about this, and they're not quite sure how to answer. So it's good for physicians, and it's also good for patients when they have questions about breast density and what to do about it. So that's just reference. So still, we had a question about, are there different levels? And there are. This image is from our ACR, American College of Radiology, website. It gives us an example of breast density. So like I said, screening mammograms are very, very regulated by the FDA, and you have to do a specific way of reporting, and every screening mammogram has to give a density category, and we also have to give a BI-RADS category. BI-RADS stands for Breast Imaging Reporting and Data System. So for density, there's four levels, and they've changed them to A, B. This is the older image because they've changed them. Instead of 1, 2, 3, they changed them to A, B, C, D. But on the left is the fatty replaced breast tissue, where you just see a small amount of that white, wisps of white tissue, and the darker, more lucent or see-through tissue is breast fat. And then we kind of step up a level to the average density, or on your report it'll say scattered fibroglandular breast tissue. That's that level. And then we go to heterogeneously dense. That's this third category. You can see you're getting more of that white breast tissue, and then extremely dense. And I know it's a small picture here, but most of that breast tissue is just white glandular tissue. Those are the ones where you have more of a masking issue. And when I talk about 3D mammograms, they're definitely helpful to reduce the amount of masking effect. And that's the issue with dense breast. Is it going to mask a small breast cancer? For the first three levels, Tomo or 3D mammograms really is helpful. When you get to this extremely dense, and I will say when we're speaking about the whole population, how many women fall into each category, the majority of women are going to be 2 or 3. 80% of women are either going to be a 2 or a 3. There's 10% that are fat, about 10% that are fatty, and about 10% that are extremely dense. So a small number of people have this extremely dense category. And those are the ones where we really start thinking about masking, because even Tomo is good and helpful, but it's not perfect, and we can still get masking in this extremely dense category, and even a little bit in the heterogeneous, but Tomo's, or 3D, is very good for the heterogeneously dense women. So those are just the categories and kind of an overview of breast density. So do we need to do anything more if you have dense breasts? So while this breast density law was good, I think it's great that women are aware of their breast density, it did create a lot of anxiety in women and questions when the standard of care didn't change. So it was still just get your routine screening mammogram, but now we're telling you you have dense tissue and it might not be, and there's a chance that it might be, that it could hide something in there. So there's a lot of anxiety, I think, over this breast density notification. But in general, if it's an average risk person, no risk factors, just dense breast tissue, annual screening mammograms are still the standard of care. They don't say, you should definitely be doing this in addition to that. But I tell women with average risk women who do have dense breast tissue to consider getting 3D mammograms. It's giving us more information. It's a more detailed look. It helps decrease the masking. But there's nothing in addition that's kind of standard guidelines for women who are dense and have average risk. But what I do say to those women are be aware of how your breasts feel. I know there's new recommendations out that say, you don't need to do self-breast exams, or even your doctor doesn't need to do breast exams, and I find that a little, I don't know, I guess I don't agree with that recommendation, so I tell women, know how your breasts feel. Breast tissue can be lumpy. It's normal for breast tissue to be lumpy. Dense tissue just can have that lumpy feel to it. But get used to how your breasts feel, and if there's a change, let your doctor know if there's any change. Any new lumps, definitely want to be letting your doctor know. So for average risk women with no other risk factors, just dense breasts, get their routine screening mammograms. I'd recommend yearly. Do 3D unless there's a cost to you. Most insurances are covering, but 3D mammograms, and then just being aware of your physical findings if there's any changes to your breast tissue.
Well, and we did get a question that specifically speaks to what you just talked about, and I don't know if this changes because of the particular details of this question, but they said that they were diagnosed with stage 1 cancer at the age of 43. That was 3 months after her mammogram, or a mammogram that did not detect the cancer. And she was always told that she had dense tissue. And she just was wondering, why is 3D mammogram not a standard for folks with breast with dense tissue?
It's becoming more. You know, when it first started in 2011, all the insurances and Medicare was saying this was investigational and not covering it, the cost of it, or recommending it. And now more and more studies have come out proving the benefit to it. And so I think it was 2015 that Medicare finally said, well, this is showing to be a good test, so we're going to cover it. And so now more and more insurance companies have fallen into line and are starting to cover it. There's a few that, some that still don't, but more and more, and I think everybody expects that someday it'll be kind of the standard and it'll be covered. But it's kind of the process of change and having a new technology. And you know, for the having a normal mammogram and then having breast cancer found a few months later, then, yeah, you want to go back and say, oh, is it just masked in there? Definitely is quite often that's the case. You know, occasionally you can get a really fast-growing tumor that that really wouldn't have been seen on anything, but now it's changed in over 3 months, and now it would have been found. But it's hard to know. You know, everybody's a different situation. But that masking issue is a real thing, where you can have a mammogram that looks totally normal, but there's something in there. And so, you know, it's like I said, it's not perfect. It's a good test. It's not a perfect test. I want to jump now to, so if you have dense breast tissue, should you do anything else? And like we said, the average risk women, no, be aware of your physical findings, and I suggest 3D mammograms. And I just want to talk a little bit about other imaging tests for the breast tissue. MRI and ultrasound are probably the two most you hear about. I'm not going to go into too much about molecular imaging and BSGI. It's a nuclear medicine test. The radiation dose is higher for those. There are some good tests there. They're not as mainstream, and so I'm not going to talk too much about that. I want to talk about MRI here. So MRI, so let's say you have dense breast tissue and you do have other risk factors, you know, family history, some genetic mutations, then MRI may be indicated. So for women who don't have any other risk factors but just dense breast tissue, it's not indicated to do a screening MRI, and it wouldn't be covered by insurance. If you wanted to do it, it would be an out-of-pocket cost, which would be pretty expensive. But for women who have other risk factors, screening MRI is recommended for women that have a greater than 20% lifetime risk. And there's these risk calculators that people can put in all this information to get a lifetime risk number. But women that we think of at high risk are women with the BRCA mutation. That's like the Angelina Jolie mutation that people talked about when she was in the news. But it's not very common. It's a real thing that they can test for. Not very many women do have that mutation, but it is out there. And then there's women who've had radiation to their chest wall between the ages of 10 and 30. That's usually for a Hodgkin's lymphoma. That radiation, and that's a high-dose radiation to treat their lymphoma. Those women are at significantly increased risk. And then based on family history, and I, when I talk to women, I start thinking about them falling into the high-risk category. If they have first-degree relatives, that means mom, sister, daughter, with breast cancer diagnosed premenopausally, so 40s, 30s, those women start to get up to that high-risk category, so they may be candidates for high-risk screening. And then there's some rare syndromes that we won't talk about too much. And then finally, if you've had a history of atypia on a biopsy or you've had a personal history of breast cancer, then you get into that gray area of being close to high risk and considering screening MRI. So that's MRI. We're getting short on time. I'll quickly zip through ultrasound. Ultrasound, there's two different types. There's diagnostic and screening. In our community and in most communities, diagnostic ultrasound is primarily what people offer. So if you have an abnormality on your mammogram and you need to go look in that area with ultrasound, or if you have a focal symptom, we will do ultrasound, so a lump or focal pain. And then screening ultrasound is when we look through the whole breast tissue. That's come up more with this breast density. There's a big downside to it when they did these large-scale studies that there's a lot of false positives. So if you screen a bunch of women with ultrasound, you're going to find a lot of benign things that aren't cancer. So it results in more tests and maybe more biopsies. So that's why most people in our community haven't adopted doing routinely offering screening ultrasound. There's one private practice radiology group that does offer it, but for the most part, most breast centers aren't doing it because of the high false positive rate. And then my last one of my last slides here is just the process of breast cancer detection. You either have a symptom or you have a screening mammogram. And if there's an abnormality on the screening mammogram or if you have a symptom, then you usually are, you would be evaluated with a diagnostic mammogram and or an ultrasound, and then maybe go on to a biopsy if there's something suspicious. And then the biopsy is how we tell whether or not it was it's a breast cancer or a benign process, a non-cancerous process. So that's just a quick overview of the breast cancer detection process. And then here's their summary of what we talked about. I know the screening recommendations are confusing, and it's hard to talk to women about it, to go through all the different guidelines, and these people say this, and these people say that. But just remember, everybody does agree, you save the most lives if you start at 40 and you do it every year. And then the 3D mammograms give us a more detailed look of the breast tissue. It helps decrease that masking effect of dense breast tissue that may not be well seen on a standard mammogram. And then I also want to stress that dense breast tissue is normal. You know, some people get this result in the mail and think something's wrong with them or they're abnormal. Half of the women are walking around with dense breast tissue. It's normal to have, but think about any other risk factors. And then, like I said, be aware of your physical findings and get the routine screening. And then just talking about dense breast a little bit more of why we talk about it, because it does have the potential to mask underlying breast cancer. So that's a summary of everything. And then, you know, we already had some questions. I don't know if anybody else has any other questions about any of that.
I do have at least a couple more questions. So
okay.
If anybody does want to submit a question, now is the time. One of the questions that we had was, once a person has a mastectomy and implants, what type of imaging would be used to check for recurrence under the implants?
They typically don't. And now I'd have to, we typically don't do routine imaging for post-mastectomy. Now that, there's a few exceptions. So and this would be based on the surgical technique. Sometimes they'll do a nipple sparing, and then you may have a little bit of breast tissue underneath the nipple. And so sometimes, depending on how much tissue is there, and that's a question for the surgeon, whether or not it needs to be screened or not. But if it's a total mastectomy with reconstruction, typically there's not a routine imaging test. It's just physical exams, yearly physical exams. And most of the time, now I'd have to defer to our plastics people, but most of the time they put the implant under the muscle. So the breast cancers are outside. They're on top of the muscle. So now there's exceptions to every rule, but you would expect a breast cancer to recurrence to be on top of the muscle, the pectoralis muscle, because that's where the breast lives. So most implants are behind the muscle, so they don't routinely, you know, get like an MRI or anything to look behind it, because they expect that if a recurrence comes, it should be picked up on a physical exam. So in general, that's what they say about post-mastectomy patients.
Perfect. So we did get a comment that leads into a question, and I think you've kind of addressed this, but I want to just make sure it's clear. So the comment was that she feels like her 3D mammogram saved her life. In 2015, when she had hers, it was $150 extra, but now she has heard that 3D is covered by her insurance. So is 3D mammography covered by most insurances?
Most. I won't say all, and I won't say exactly which ones, but most, you know, like I said, once Medicare started covering it, most of the main ones in our state have covered. And most will do without a cost to you. If it's covered, it's covered, and for screening. I know there's at least one insurance company that says, well, we cover it, but it's part of your deductible or your copay. So in that situation, even though it's covered, there's still a bill to the patient that's related to whatever their particular copay is or deductible is. But most insurance companies that are covering it completely for screening. And so we always say, if you're not sure, call them and ask before you have your mammogram to know. And if it is an out-of-pocket cost, like she said, it's somewhere around, usually it's around $100. You know, every hospital system or site's a little different, but that's kind of the ballpark of cost if it was out-of-pocket cost.
Well, thank you. And then another question that we got is, if I have a new breast symptom, is a screening mammogram at an adequate evaluation?
So this is an important thing that we try to stress to primary care providers and to patients, that if you have especially a new lump or a new nipple inversion or a new nipple discharge, although we don't recommend squeezing to check, it's spontaneous, happening on its own discharge. But if there's a new breast symptom, a screening mammogram is not an adequate test. We know that screening can sometimes mask things, and so if somebody says, I have a new lump, and the mammogram is normal, we wouldn't say, oh, it's fine. We would say, okay, well, then we don't see anything on the mammogram, but we're going to check that area in ultrasound as well. So we, at our sites, we always have women actually sign a form that says, I don't have any new symptoms, because we know that mammograms aren't perfect, and we want to know if you have a new lump, because if you do, we would do the mammogram and an ultrasound of that area, because we wouldn't want to have a potential for missing it, I'll put it that way. So any new symptoms, pain is kind of a gray area. Pain is usually benign, although some breast cancers can present with pain, but there's a lot of benign, normal breast pain. So we focus on new lumps, new nipple inversion, new nipple discharge spontaneous, but definitely would need a diagnostic workup and not just a screening mammogram.
Well, thank you so much for all of the details. Gracious thanks to our speaker, Dr. Prescott, and to everyone for joining us today. Again, please share what you learned and via our social media channels, and please plan to join us for upcoming webinars in the new year and at our annual education conference in October 28th for a day of encouragement, engagement, and empowerment. Wishing everyone a warm, healthy, and happy holiday season. Thank you.
Thank you.